although polio hasn't been seen in the US for some years now, the effects of the virus are still with us, and it's beginning to reappear in the healthcare system through a condition known as post-polio syndrome. Our reporting colleague, Kate O'Connell, did some work on this, and she found a really interesting guy whose his name's Richard Daggett. Mr. Daggett contracted polio as a 13-year-old at the height of the epidemic in the early 1950s. And now as an adult, 30 years later, more or less, he's after his recovery, he's now gone through what's essentially a relapse of polio, where he's experiencing muscle weakness and breathing issues. And we're just going to play about 3 minutes of him talking about what that's like and how that's impacted him. And just to be aware that he is speaking with the help of a respirator, so just bear with him, because you are really hearing the impacts of the disease as he shares his experience.
Polio survivors traditionally have been very proactive. All of this post-polio stuff was brought to the attention of the medical community by polio survivors. Few doctors did the time to research. There was references to it in medical journals, but it was very arcane type stuff. You didn't really see it unless you really researched it. I thought that once you reached a plateau after your initial polio and you recovered to whatever extent you did, that would be the way you'd be the rest of your life. Nobody told us, 30 years later, watch out. It just never was mentioned. Nobody even thought about it. So I have people, I get emails and letters all the time. They'll mention what their symptoms are and think, could this be related to polio? And I think groups that, like Rotary and the Gates Foundation and other things that are doing such good work to eliminate polio or new cases of polio, they should be aware that it's going to be a long-term effort. Even if there's no more new cases, if magically we wipe out all new cases, worldwide there are millions of polio survivors, and many of those are going through the same things I'm going through. They're basically just falling apart. And I'm fortunate because I'm connected through a lot of different groups. I knew what was happening. And so I took corrective steps. But other people in other places aren't that fortunate. And I see young people that maybe got polio in the 70s or 80s, and I'm wondering what's going to be like, in 10 years, these people are going to start having problems. Because it's not every polio survivor, but the majority of polio survivors are having renewed weakness, pain, cold intolerance, breathing problems, swallowing problems.
And that was Mr. Richard Daggett. Richard was speaking with reporter Kate O'Connell, obviously speaking with help from a respirator there to help him tell his story. So we're joined. We're going to talk more about this particular issue with Janice Nichols. Janice, thanks very much for joining Innovation Friday.
Thank you.
You got to hear a little bit of Richard's story there. Did you relate to, what was your reaction to the things he was saying? He was really, talking about the kind of a pretty widespread impact of the ongoing and lasting effects of polio for many survivors.
Yes, I have never met Richard, but I've spoken to him on the phone and emailed back and forth with him for many years. Richard was in an iron lung and got out of it, and really has probably one of the worst cases of post-polio syndrome I know of. He's back, you know, confined to bed or a wheelchair. He requires a ventilator all the time, which is especially cruel because he did get out of an iron lung. But he has an incredible spirit, and he's determined, as I am, to see polio eradicated. I think our impetus is different. Richard spends the bulk of his time dealing with post-polio syndrome. I choose to spend my time fighting out about the importance of eradicating the disease through vaccination, because I don't want children who could contract the disease next week or this afternoon or whatever deal with what all of us are dealing with 30, 40, 50 years after the acute episode. So my goal is to get rid of polio, not only because of the acute phase, but also because we've got to end this once and for all,
right,
and the terrible cycle.
So, Jan, let's spend some time because we really want to hear your story as well, which is pretty remarkable. You're a polio pioneer. Tell us what that is, and tell us your story.
Okay, my polio experience began in the fall of 1953. My twin brother and I were in first grade in DeWitt, New York, an eastern suburb of Syracuse. Within just a couple of days, 8 children out of a classroom of 24 were admitted to the hospital with acute polio. Within 20 days, 12 children and one mom in the suburb were admitted to the hospital.
Wow.
And three children died ultimately. My twin brother was one of those children. I was admitted to the hospital on the night that he was buried with a diagnosis of paralytic polio. And later on that week, my mom suffered a miscarriage. I made a remarkable recovery. I had incredible therapy in the hospital, and my parents were able to pay for private individual therapy for me for a long time once I was able to go home. So I eventually became a cheerleader, both in grade school and high school. I was a proficient dancer and ice skater, so I was one lucky girl. I do have some post-polio syndrome issues today, but nothing like Richard's. I call mine more annoyances than anything else. In the spring of 1954, that's when the polio salt vaccine trial took place. I was just, quote, beginning to walk again. I walked like a little tin soldier, but I was going under my own steam, and just under 2 million children in first, second, and third grade, participated in the vaccine trial. The children were from the United States, Canada, and Finland, and they called us polio pioneers because they told us that we were doing something not only for our own generation, but for all future generations of children and young adults. So they made us feel terribly important and famous. But the vaccine trial went well, and the disease was actually eradicated in the United States in 1979. So that vaccine trial was incredible. It remains the largest vaccine trial in the history of the world.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I mean, you've just in the earlier part of your story, Janice, where you're really reminding us of the terrible ferocity of polio at its height and just how it cut its way through communities and, you know, your twin brother. I mean, it's really a stark reminder, I think, because I think there are people, you know, there are doctors here who've never seen a case of polio, I'm sure. But there it is in your lifetime, this incredible scourge that just caused so much suffering, and people are still living with the consequences of it. So I guess when you see things like the outbreak in Syria, or there's been some cases reported in the Horn of Africa as well, I think recently, what's your kind of response to that? What is that the kind of stuff that really gets you kind of fired up and concerned again?
Oh, I'm fired up every day.
Sound like
early,
it.
Uh-huh. In 2003, a close friend in college mailed me a copy of the Rotarian magazine, and there I read about children in Africa who were still suffering. I'm a medical rehabilitation counselor. My husband is a physician, but we weren't seeing polio in our country, so I was under the impression that we were actually done with the disease.
Right.
So when I read that article, I decided I had to do something, and I've been on a mission ever since. I speak throughout the United States and Canada. I write in many different newspapers and magazines, any opportunity I have to speak out about the importance of getting rid of this vaccine, of this disease, and the only way we can do it is through vaccination. And now that we've got many young parents who've never seen the disease and many of the childhood diseases that I grew up with, they can think that it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it reminds me that God let me live for a reason. I've got to speak out about the importance of getting rid of this disease. If we do, it will only be the second vaccine-preventable disease that we've been able to eradicate. So I just have to speak out. I have become pretty popular because they don't charge for my services. So I think you're really popular when you're free.
Right. But I guess that's a kind of useful, that's probably a pretty good strategy, because I think it helps you, it would help you get out to some places that you may not normally get invited to.
Absolutely. Right. Lots of places, because money is always at a premium. Mm-hmm. But I just feel that I've got to speak out, and I will not rest until we are done with this disease. And I'm an optimist. I believe that we can get rid of this. The year before Frankie and I got sick, there were 600,000 cases of polio worldwide. This year, we have 341 cases. We're up from last year, but I really believe that as cagey as this virus is, I think the determination and modern science can beat this disease once and for all, and I support anybody and everybody around the world who's working hard every day.
Do you think we've seen some recent, there's certainly a kind of a strong movement out there being driven, an anti-immunization kind of movement amongst some parents. How do you kind of respond to those sorts of arguments that they might bring to, you know, perhaps a presentation that you do? I'm sure you field questions on this when you're out on the road. What's your sort of view on that kind of anti-immunization argument that's out there?
Well, I think the parents mean well, but they haven't seen the disease. And we live in an era where everybody can get on the internet and read about anything and everything imaginable. Unfortunately, probably 90% of all the information on vaccines is anti-vaccine. So I feel that the best thing I can do is tell my story and then provide the parents with as much factual information as possible. There's a vaccine education center at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. I think it seems to get an award every year for being number one or near number one in terms of children's hospitals. They have wonderful, wonderful factual information. There are excellent books out about the diseases, the vaccines, that can kind of allay the fears of parents. So all I can really do is give them factual information and encourage them to read that information, which is very different than the kind of stuff you can read on the internet that never has citations accompanying it.
Right.
And then that's all I can do, but it won't stop me from speaking out, and sometimes people can get pretty rude. I've been called a liar. I've been told I'm a pawn of Big Pharma, which is really silly because I don't get paid to do anything, but I just feel that I have to keep speaking out and knowing that maybe some people will always disagree with me, but maybe there's going to be a parent out there that's on the fence, and the information I give them and the pictures of my twin, this beautiful little boy who was alive and waiting for Halloween one day and dead 61 hours later, maybe that will make an impact, and they will, you know, get their children vaccinated.
Yeah. We're speaking with Janice Nichols. Janice is a polio pioneer and a very, very eloquent advocate for the eradication, finally, of polio across the country. Janice, stay with us. I just wanted to play a little bit more tape from Richard Daggett. Richard is suffering from, as you pointed out, Janice, a particularly severe version of post-polio syndrome. In this little excerpt of an interview that Kate O'Connell did with him, he really just talks about what impact polio's had on his life. Let's listen to Richard.
I never married because I never had the stamina to do a 9-to-5 job 5 days a week. I can work quite a while, maybe 3 or 4 days, but then I've got to stop. So I became what I call a professional volunteer. I help where I can in the community doing different civic groups and things. I help just wherever I can help. And I write a lot. And I usually write about polio and disability in general from a physical standpoint, but also a social standpoint. We polio survivors have always been very proactive. All of the ADA and all those kind of things, those were polio survivors that pushed for that. You'll see others kind of on the bandwagon, but all of that open campuses, all of that stuff started in the 60s with polio survivors. It's amazing. Sometimes I look at these lists of, who sponsored certain legislation. They all had polio because we're weird, I guess. We just have, we push for those kind of things. And I never married because I couldn't. Maybe that's old-fashioned, but I felt if I couldn't support a family financially, I shouldn't have a family. That's just the way I was brought up. That's a little bit old-fashioned, maybe, but that's the way I was brought up. So, and as a teenager and young adult, I know that I had a low physical self-image. I say I could walk and everything, but my arms were obviously weaker, and I would have a hard time in my 20s saying to a nice young lady, say, would you like to go out this evening? By the way, you'll have to drive. It was a different era.
Richard Daggett speaking there, and Janice Nichols is with us. Janice, yeah, so there's, I guess, a different life experience, a different journey, different trajectory that Richard's been on, compared to how things worked out for you. But I guess that's also part of the point of polio, is that it's just the randomness and the way that it's just had such individual impact on people who survived it.
And it's going to impact everyone differently. There are many people who had horrible cases of polio but have grown up to marry. Richard has lived a very full life, and he's made choices that were best for him. But boy, if you read about some of the people, famous people that have had polio, Itzhak Perlman, Arthur Clarke, the author, Francis Ford Coppola, Mia Farrow had polio and was in an iron lung.
Yep.
So there are many, many people, and we've all, I think, chosen a different path. But they say that polio survivors are very spunky people. And I think maybe because it hit us when we were children, we fought so hard just to be able to walk again, if we could ever walk again, that it's impacted our life. And I think probably for most of us in positive ways. I have not had the loss that Richard has had, and yet my life has been very focused since I was a little girl. I decided I would enter a medical field because I knew what it was like to suffer physically, and I knew what it was like to suffer emotionally. Whatever polio did to me physically, the loss of your twin is double or triple hard, and I had to come to terms with it. I had an incredibly supportive family and friends surrounding me, and they still do today, and I was just determined that I would have to use my life experiences in a very small, private way, but do it to better humanity, I guess. And Richard is doing the same. He is very influential in the polio survivor community, and he's just a wonderful guy.
And I think he also touched on that in the little bit of the interview we heard where he was just talking about activists, polio survivors as activists and advocates as well. You could really hear that perspective of how that kind of exploded onto, say, he was talking about the university campuses in the 1960s, which is a really interesting kind of dimension to the story of polio.
Right. Right, and I think one important thing, I don't know if Richard mentioned it earlier when I wasn't on with you, there is an organization called Post Polio Health International. Their website is www.post-polio.org, and their whole purpose is to help people dealing with minor and various serious issues associated with long-term survivorship. But they also want to preserve the information, the medical and social information that they have, so that people continuing to suffer from polio today will have some resources that they can utilize. It's a wonderful organization.
Right. Post-polio.org.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like a remarkable resource, Janice.
It really is.
And Janice, you've written a book about, as part of your, part of your journey, you've also written a book about your experience, your life, the loss of your brother, and that's still available?
Yes, it is. I really wrote the book, and it goes through medical information as well. Believe it or not, I actually married a guy who, another orthopedic surgeon who trained under my orthopedic surgeon.
Right.
So my husband, went through training, picking that man's brain all the time, trying to learn as much as he could. I also ended up meeting the doctor that signed my twin's death certificate and actually took care of me, and she just died a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
But I was so naive. I thought I was going to write this book, and everybody would read about my twin and suddenly decide to vaccinate their children. I guess maybe that's what I needed to get me through the 4 years of daily writing and researching that it took to write the book. But I wrote it just not to make any money, but to point out what a terrible disease it is, but it's a disease that we can get rid of. We've got so many diseases that don't have a vaccine that can prevent it, and yet polio has a vaccine that is highly effective. And I just want parents throughout the world to realize the importance of vaccinating their kids, because the Syrian episode is reminding people, there are lots of articles being written right now that are reminding people that polio is a disease that's just a plane trip away.
Right.
We don't know who is coming into this country carrying that virus.
Yeah, and that's your message is very loud and clear, Janice. What's the name of your book, just so people can look it up if they're interested?
Twin Voices, A Memoir of Polio, The Forgotten Killer. It's written in several voices, in a family, based on interviews, friends. My perception, I took the role of Frankie as a little boy talking about his life so that people would understand it. And then Dr. Turek, the doctor that signed Frankie's death certificate, who was both a pediatrician and an MPH in epidemiology.
Janice, thanks very much. We're out of time. Janice Nichols, thanks very much for joining Innovation Friday.
Okay, thank you for having me.
You're
welcome. Good luck to you. Bye-bye.